Boker Tov, everybody. Erev Tov in Israel. I want to welcome everybody. Part four, right? Part four of our series. We're talking about Ivrit. Yeah. The Hebrew is not just another language. And welcome back, Rabbi Shvat, and what's been a very difficult week for the people of Israel and the Jewish people around the world. And we should have Bisarot Tovot.
Amen.
That's all. Okay, Amen. Rabbi Shvat, Vakasha.
Okay. Learning Hebrew is, as we'll see, not just another language, but there are a lot of the deeper aspects, whether they be national aspects, hashkafic aspects, and I hope that we'll cover all of the different points. I want to start out with the schar, the reward. One of the ways that Chazal stressed that a mitzvah is important is by telling us that it brings a large reward. And we're going to start out with the share screen in source number one from the Talmud Yerushalmi, where the Talmud Yerushalmi tells us, Kol mishu kavua be'eretz Yisrael, v'ochel chulyo betahara, u'medaber b'lshon ha'kodesh, muvtach lo shu'u mecheh ho'olam haba. Somebody who lives in the land of Israel, he eats his chulin in Tahara. This is an interesting one because today, Baruch Hashem, we all do it. Midoraita, you only have to do Netilat Yadayim for Kodeshim, for Korbanot, for Chala, for Truma. Today, we do Netilat Yadayim also for our secular bread. Some do it for fruits, even wet fruits or vegetables. But the idea is not just for holy things, but also for secular things. Umedaber b'lshon ha'kodesh, and he speaks the Hebrew language. Muvtach lo shu mechaye ha'olam haba. He has promised to share in the world to come. That's a pretty big reward that we would all like, but that's not it. The Chazal tell us in Vayikra Rabba, in Parsha Lamed Bet, Rav Huna amar b'shem bar kafra, b'shvil arba dvarim nigalu Yisrael mimitzrayim. What's hiding in between the lines here is Chazal tell us that our forefathers in Egypt were idolaters. They didn't do circumcision. They didn't do any of the mitzvot that they were supposed to. So why did God redeem us from Egypt? The Midrash tells us there are four things that they did keep. Shelo shinu et shmam. They continued using their Hebrew names. Ve'et lishonam. They continued speaking Hebrew. V'lo amru lashon hara. They didn't tattle on each other. V'lo nimtza b'nehem echad min parutz be'erva. And they kept their family purity. They didn't mingle with the Egyptians. We'll talk about this a little more in depth. Then in one of the other midrashim, parallel midrashim, it says shelo chilfu salmotam, that they continued dressing as Hebrews. And this brought the redemption. So we see that not only does speaking Hebrew, we'll talk about modern Hebrew in a little while, that's the obvious question, is modern Hebrew today Lashon HaKodesh? We'll see that the answer is clearly yes, more than any other language in the world today. But speaking Hebrew, it gives us a share in the world to come. It brings us the Geulah. And a third and final reward in the Sifrei as Midrash Halacha, on Sefer Dvarim, on the pasuk that we're all familiar with in the second paragraph of Shema, V'limadtem otam et b'neichem l'daber bam. You shall teach it to your children and speak in them. Now, what does it mean, speak in them? If it were talking about learning Torah, I would say speak it. Chazal or Darshan, Mikan Amruk Shatinok Matchil Daber Avim Daber Imo Lashon HaKodesh. From the time that a child begins to speak, his parents should speak with him in the holy language. Rashi changes it a little. If we'll have time, we'll talk about the small change. Rashi says, Mesiach Imo Bilshon HaKodesh. Converses with him. Rashi changes the verb of the Pasuk, where it says, to speak in it, Rashi says to discuss or to converse in it. umilamdo Torah, and also to teach your children Torah from a young age. The Shulchan Aruch brings down that the first pasuk that a Jewish child should say is Torah tzivah lanu Moshe morasha kilat Yaakov. Ve'in in medaberim mobil loshon hakodesh ve'ino milamdo Torah ra'ui lo ki'ilu kovro sh'ne'emar v'limatem v'tamed b'neichem v'daber bam l'man yirbu yimeichem v'imei b'neichem. Im limatem otam et b'neichem l'daberem. Sorry. My share screen went a little down. Ra'ui lo kilu. Im limatem otam et b'neichem yirbu yimeichem v'imei b'neichem. V'im lav yikatsru yimeichem v'chulei. Here we see that for one who speaks to their children in Hebrew, it gives a long life. So we saw it brings a share in the world to come, it brings redemption, and it also gives a long life. Now, I imagine most of the participants here are familiar with similar ma'amarim, similar quotes in Chazal. For example, when we talk about a mitzvah that grants a share that gives a long life. Everybody thinks of kibud av v'em. If you honor your parents, it gives you a long life. Shiluach hakein. If you send away the mother bird, it gives you a long life. The third is eifa ve'eifa, dealing honestly, having a good weights, ideal weights, clean weights when you weigh something for the customer. And this is number four. And the same thing that we saw regarding Geula. We also know Chazal is another one, Kavod Hamet. Not that I'm familiar with, but if you can find it, I'd be, maybe I'll relate to the comments at the end. Somebody who brings a Dvar Torah in the name of he who said it, kol mevi davar b'shem omro, he also mevi geula la'olam. He brings redemption to the world. I always like asking audience if anybody knows who says that, because everybody knows that quote, but they don't say that in the name of he who says it. The answer is Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Elazar actually does say it in the name who he heard it from Rabbi Chanina, that when you say something in the name of he who said it, it brings Geula to the world. Somech Geula L'Tfila. Right? If you don't talk between Gal Yisrael and Shmona Esrei, that brings Geula. There are other things also which bring a share in the world to come. Right? All the things in the Mishnah, that the first Mishnah Peah, that these are the things that Adam Ochel Perotem Bo'olam Hazeh V'Keren Kayemet Lo'olam Haba, that we benefit these mitzvot, that we benefit in this world, and we benefit in the world to come. Right? Kibud Av V'Eng, Milut Chasadim, honoring our parents, kindness, etc., etc. But the chidush of the mitzvah of speaking Hebrew is it's the only mitzvah that I'm familiar with that Chazal give all three rewards for one who observes it. Also, it lengthens your life. Also, it brings a share in the world to come, and also brings Geula. So it's very clear Chazal are telling us that this is important. The question is, why? Now, and before we get on to that, I want to just deal with a very basic question that I alluded to before. Is modern Hebrew, in fact, Lashon HaKodesh? Now, I imagine all of you know that all languages evolve over time. Some of us who were forced to learn Chaucer in high school, and we had difficulty understanding his English. And 200 years later, Shakespeare was a little better, but it still was difficult to understand. And modern English is a lot different from English 400 years ago or 600 years ago. Similarly, Old French. Everybody knows that when Rashi brings Old French to help clarify an idea, I actually had a guy in yeshiva, a boy from France, Shmuel Frank, who whenever I came in along in Rashi, in the Gemara, on the Torah, Rashi, in a word in French, I would ask him what it is, and he never knew. And after four or five times, he says, Ari, that's old French. Modern French is not old French. They're two totally different languages because languages evolve. Now, the same thing with the, by the way, I'll add parenthetically, there is a Milon, a dictionary of old French written by a professor, Dermestatter, which ironically, he was a religious Jew. I don't know if to the end of his life, but he was very clearly learned. And he pieced together a lot of the old French language from Rashi and Tosfot to different Rishonim. In other words, the Jewish people, like a lot of things, that's part of our role as the eternal nation, we kept old French better than the French did. Getting back to the Hebrew language, you don't have to be a linguist to, although I am clearly not a linguist, I make a lot of mistakes in Hebrew. I did write a book on the mitzvah of speaking Hebrew and the importance of the Israeli flag called Laharim et Adegel. But I have a chapter here on how the Hebrew of the Torah is very clearly not the Hebrew of Yeshayahu, which is very clearly different from Hebrew in the Mishnah, which is very clearly different from the Hebrew of today. Now, when Rabbi Meir is telling us in the Talmud Yerushalmi that whoever speaks Lashon HaKodesh has a share in the world to come, he's obviously referring to the Lashon HaKodesh that was around in his generation. Also, Yeshayahu did not have a problem with his Hebrew evolving, being a little different from that of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is the nature of all languages. And accordingly, modern Hebrew is just as much like the Lashon HaKodesh as previous generations. It doesn't bother us that languages evolve. It's natural. Point number two, though, is ironically, the Hebrew language evolved less than most languages because languages evolve when they are spoken. That's how slang comes in. That's how words from other languages come in. Hebrew was basically used for learning Torah and for davening for 2,000 years. And that's why compared to English and Old French, Hebrew, Davka, did not evolve that much. Our Hebrew is relatively very similar to the original Hebrew. Point number three is that Eliezer ben Yehuda, the father of modern Hebrew, when he sat down to revive modern Hebrew as a spoken language, he davka turned the clock back on evolution. Because even though, as we said a minute ago, Mishnaic Hebrew is a little different from Tanakhic Hebrew, when Ben Yehuda had to choose between the two, anybody who knows his biography knows that he preferred going back to the original. He even turned the clock back on part of the evolution. And that is why, even though languages always are evolving, and Hebrew is too, we didn't see Yeshayahu or Chazal have a problem with the natural evolution of languages. If somebody wants to speak Hebrew like Avram Avinu with a Vav HaYipuch, you know, Kol HaKavod, but there's no problem with the evolution of the language. Maybe we'll just jump for a second where the Torah Tmima, who wrote 120 years ago, he wrote a sefer called Safa L'Ne'emanim, on the importance of speaking Hebrew. And he writes in it as follows. I don't know if people got the source sheets this time, but we'll look together and share screen. Towards the end, source number 26. Rabbaruch HaLevi Epstein, Ve'omnam zeh hu rak li'inyan mila achat. He says the idea of bringing in a foreign word, a new word from another language, That's no problem whatsoever. We see Chazal did it. For example, Sanhedrin, that's Greek. Ambatia is found in the Mishnah. That is Greek. There are a lot of Greek words that Chazal brought into Hebrew, and they did not have a problem. Yes, it's mitzvah to speak Hebrew, but bringing in the word telephone every now and then. By the way, Ben Yehuda did have a word for telephone. He called it a sach rachok, which means to converse from a distance. The word, a linguist explained to me that why the word did not take off is because in Hebrew, verbs are very connected with nouns. And you can't say, ani asach rachik lecha, I will call you tomorrow. You can say, ani talfin lecha, but Ben Yehuda's suggestion did not work out. The Torah Tumima goes on and to say that it's better not to use phrases from other languages, because if the idea is to speak Hebrew, let's speak Hebrew. And by the way, somebody asked me, a lot of people have asked me why I wrote the book about the mitzvah of speaking Hebrew in Hebrew, because those who don't realize the importance, they would probably prefer for the book to be in English. There is actually today, there is a rabbi, one of the heads of the Skokie Yeshiva in Chicago, is in the process of translating the book to English. So if anyone wants to wait, eventually it'll come out, Bezrat Hashem. Okay, how do we get out of share screen? Okay, so we'll keep it in share screen.
There should be, if you want, you can just hit stop share at the top of your screen. It should be. You should see a little thing, yeah, stop share, it, and you click that.
Okay.
Normally.
Oh, no, okay, we'll keep it this way. Okay, let's go back to the Talmud Yerushalmi. And we want to understand why is it important to speak Hebrew. The Talmud Yerushalmi, as we mentioned before, chooses three examples here and groups them together. Why living in the land of Israel, eating your secular food in purity, and speaking Lashon HaKodesh brings a share in the world to come. Now, we mentioned just before that there are about 15, 20 things that bring a share in the world to come. But if the Yerushalmi groups these three together, apparently there's a common denominator. And the common denominator here, I think, is very clear. When somebody lives in the land of Israel, even his rocks are holy, his apples are holy, the air is holy. Even the secular becomes holy. And that is one of the chidushim of the land of Israel that we spoke about in last week's shiur. When a person eats his chulin in tahara, that's number two, even his secular food is rising to a higher level. The same thing when one speaks Hebrew. Even his secular speech, you could be discussing sports, you could be discussing the weather, you could be discussing fashions or news, whatever you're discussing, it takes on a certain level of holiness. How do we know? Excuse me, how do we know that? Well, it's brought down the halacha. Let's look together in source two, where the Shulchan Aruch in Ilchot Shabbat, I don't want to get on a tangent of the laws of Shabbat. We all know that Shabbat is a day for holiness. And the best thing to do on Shabbat is, aside from resting and davening, singing, spending time with your family, is to learn Torah. And the Shulchan Aruch is of the opinion that it's better not to read secular books. You shouldn't read secular books on Shabbat. And that's how the Sephardic in general paskin. The Ramah, though, has an interesting addition. Haggah is for Ashkenazic Jews. V'nir eledak dek, hada asur likrot v'sichat chulin v'sipurei milchamot. That which we shouldn't talk about, secular things or history, wars on Shabbat. Hain davka im tuvim b'lashon la'az. This is only if they are written in a foreign language. And by the way, Yiddish is also considered La'ads. Whenever you see Yiddish mentioned, it's almost always called La'ads. Aval Bilshon HaKodesh, if you were reading a newspaper or a history book or a secular topic and you're discussing it in Hebrew, that is allowed on Shabbat. The question is obviously one. What if I tell a joke in Hebrew, that makes it holy? The Mishnah Brura says yes. The language itself has holiness. A second aspect that we'll talk about later, that also when you know Hebrew, it will help you in your Torah study. We'll talk about that later. But the first point here is this is the opinion of Tosfot, and it's brought down lahalakha in the Ramah. By the way, I believe the Beit Yosef quotes this as well. So it's not just for Ashkenazim. That Lashon HaKodesh elevates the secular to a higher level to enable it to be spoken on Shabbat. Parenthetically, the Mishnah Berurah goes on and says that it's better not to rely on this opinion, that it's better to learn Torah on Shabbat. By the way, the Prima Gadim, he brings the Taz, who says that a person, in his opinion, should not even read secular books during the week. But if it's in Lashon HaKodesh, if it's in Hebrew, then that is enough to hallow it during the week, but in his opinion, not on Shabbat. But either way, everybody agrees that Lashon HaKodesh takes a secular topic, and just like Eretz Yisrael, where the secular is holy, and doing the Tilat Yadayim for secular bread also brings, reveals godliness in your secular act of eating, so too, when you speak, even secular speech in Hebrew, that makes it holy. It's no longer secular. Obviously, there are different levels of holiness. And if one learns Torah in Hebrew, then that is holiness in the holy language. That is the best of everything. But if a person, and if you think about it, I would imagine even a learned person, most of his speech during the day is secular. There's a certain percentage of Torah, of davening. On the other extreme, there's a small, hopefully a small percentage of speech which is prohibited, lashon hara, or cursing. But most of speech is really in the middle. When you're talking with your wife, with your spouse, you're talking to your children, what are we going to do for Shabbat? What are you going to eat? What are we going to wear? What am I going to do at work? Et cetera, et cetera. Most of speech is secular. So if one speaks his secular speech in Hebrew, that is elevating most of his speech to that higher level of Kiddusha. Now, source number five will really blow you away. The Shulchan Aruch in Hilchot Shmuot gives the following halacha. And here I remember explicitly the sources in the Beit Yosef. So when the Ramah brings it, we'll see, it's brought in the Beit Yosef. Anybody who remembers, what was the name of that lawyer? Perry Mason, when we were kids. And you watch a lawyer program a court case on television in America, at least when I was a kid, I don't know if they still do, they would bring you a Bible and you would swear on the Bible, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. Did anybody know that they still do that? Bekitzur, where do they get it from? It's from us. Now, even though today in Beit Din we don't make shvuot too much because people were swearing on too many things and on wrong things, but originally when a Beit Din wanted to check out in a Din Torah, say Reuven says that Shimon owes me money. And Shimon says, no, Reuven, you owe me money. And the Beit Din has difficulty ascertaining who's telling the truth and who's not telling the truth. Sometimes the Beit Din will ask the person who apparently is telling more truth to take a Sefer Torah and to make an oath. That was how they used to make a Shavuah. Now, if you don't have a Sefer Torah, you would put your hand on a mezuzah, because that's also holy and parchment, or mezuzah, or a tefillin. You could hold tefillin and make a shavuah, make and take an oath in the Jewish court. If you don't have mezuzah or a tefillin, you could hold a gemara. You could hold a printed Tanakh. You could hold a Reb Moshe Feinstein, Yigur Reb Moshe. But what if you don't have a holy book? The Shulchan Aruch says, "In natal biyado ktav ashurit," source number 5. If a person takes something which is written in the Hebrew language, afilu eino rak chokhma chitzonit, even something which is totally secular, a biology book written in Hebrew. O aleph bet, she'en bo rak otiyot. Say you take an eye chart. Now those eye charts are in Hebrew. You identify the letters of the aleph bet. It doesn't have words, but it's just aleph, gimel, hey. Im nishba behen behen biyado havi shvua. Halacha l'maaseh, if you take a Bazooka Joe comic in Hebrew. They have those in the States, right? The kosher bazooka gum from Israel with a Bazooka Joe comic. Even if it's not a funny joke, but if it is in Hebrew, then you can take a shvuah, an oath on it in Beit Din, and it is holy.
Rabbi, if I don't mind to interrupt for half a second. If you don't mind, when you quote the source, if you just want to scroll, even though I post the source in the chat box, if you just want to scroll to number 5, like if you look on the share screen.
Oh, you don't see number 5 here?
No, because you have to scroll down to your computer, like you're a 23, 24, 25. Whatever you have.
I see number 5. I scrolled up.
Hold on. You
know, maybe this, yeah, now I see number 5.
I don't
now,
see anything. Okay, now we got it.
So yeah, where's the stop share screen here?
Yeah. I did post it in the chat box. I can post the sources again, but I'm saying when you're doing it, it's just...
If I want to stop the share. Okay. This is my wife, Svea. Okay. So that is point number one. To summarize point number one, Lashon HaKodesh is called Lashon HaKodesh. Notice... Kiddusha, what is Kiddusha as opposed to, say, to Tahara? The Ramchal, in his classic work, Mesilat Yesharim, The Path of the Just, he takes the Mishnah Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair and climbs that first you have to be careful, then you have to be energetic, then you have to be this, and then you have to be that, then you have to be pure, and at the end, the highest level is Kiddusha, holiness. And the Ramchal asks, what is the difference between Tahara and Kiddusha? Why is holiness a higher level? And he explains that holiness is when you take something physical and reveal the godliness in the mundane. Like the Zohar says, the Baal Shem Tov made a big deal out of the idea of lit atar panui mineh. No place is void of God. Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere. And even in our speech, just as in our walking, in our talking, in our army, everything in a Jew's life is supposed to be holy. And that was point number one. Let's go on to source number 6. And this is point number 2. Can you see, source number 6?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so this is Vayikra Rabba. We read through just the top line. Now we'll learn it a little more in depth. Ravuna Amar v'shem Bar Kafra. Bishvil arba dvarim nigalu Yisrael mimitzrayim. There were 4 things that we did right in Egypt, that even though we didn't do circumcision, and we ate from the Ever Min HaChai, and our forefathers served idolatry, there were 4 things that we did right. Shelo shinu et shmam, we continued using Hebrew names. Ve'et lishonam, we continued speaking Hebrew. Ve'lo amru lashon hara, we didn't tattle on each other. Ve'lo nimza b'nehem echad mehen parutz be'erva, and we did not find but one, as we'll see later. There was one woman who gave herself to an Egyptian man. And there are those that say, lo chilfusim lo tam, that we continue dressing Jewish as well. Lo shinu et shman, where do we learn that the Jews kept Jewish names? Reuven v'Shimon nachdim, Reuven v'Shimon salkin. The tribes went down to Egypt with Hebrew names. Reu ben, see my son, Ra'a Hashem be'onyi. Shimon, Shama Hashem, God heard me. Yehuda, Hapam ode et Hashem. Levi, now my husband will escort me. Yilaveni. These are all classic Hebrew names. After 210 years, when we came up from Egypt, it was called the tribe of Reuven, the tribe of Shimon, and the tribe of Levi. Not only that, we see classic Hebrew names. The names of the Nesiim, of the heads of the tribes, Netanel ben Suar, Nachshon ben Aminadav, Eliav ben Chelon. Chazal go on and they say, Lo hayu korin li Yehuda Rufa, velo li Reuven Luliani, velo li Yosef Listis, velo li Binyamin Alexandri. Now, the obvious question is, why would a Egyptian or a Jew in Egypt think of calling his son a Greek name like Alexander or Rufus or Listius? But this is a classic example of where Chazal are speaking to their generation. Chazal, obviously, in their generation, there was a problem with assimilation. And Chazal wanted to tell their constituents, it's good to use Hebrew names. Just like our forefathers, even when they assimilated, they kept Hebrew names. Now, what is the common denominator between keeping the Hebrew names, speaking Hebrew, keeping your Hebrew dress, not snitching on each other, and not giving yourself over to the Egyptians? All right, we asked before, similarly, regarding Olam Haba. There are many things that Chazal say which warrant Ge'ula. If Chazal bring these four or five things together, there must be a common denominator. What are Chazal telling us? They kept their national identity. Language is a sign of assimilation. I remember in my grandparents' generation, many of my friends' grandparents, they spoke between themselves in Yiddish, but they made it a point to speak to their children in English to show how American they were. By the way, the same thing with names, right? It's like belonging to a people. When Jews came to America, many Jews anglicized their names. First names for sure, right? My grandfather, his name was Aaron Yaakov. They told him, that sounds too Jewish. In America, we'll call you Harry. Or Yaakov became Jack. And the same thing regarding last names as well. Last names, my mother's maiden name is Lefkowitz. And some of the family anglicized it to Lefko. They say they lost their wits. But the idea was to become more American. Similarly, Lahavdil, when Jews began coming back to the land of Israel, by the way, I'll just mention parenthetically, I don't know if there are people here from England, but a very high percentage of Jews in England anglicized their names. And Jews from England explained to me that it's a matter of anti-Semitism. The more there is anti-Semitism, the more the Jews don't want to stand out in terms of their Jewishness. Now, David Ben-Gurion, that wasn't his original name. His original name was David Gruen or Green. But he wanted to make a statement. I am a Jew, and I want a Jewish name, not a Yiddish name, not a Ladino name, because part of the idea of the Hebrew language is that we want a common language that all of the Jews, also from Yemen and from Egypt, that all of the Jews can use. Shimon Peres, His original name is Persov. Some people may know that he is a cousin of Lauren Bacall, who her original name also was Persov. Right? To be a shagrir, I know in the old days, to be an ambassador of Israel, you had to have a Hebrew name. That's why Rav Lau, his brother Naftali Lavi, goes by the name of Lavi as opposed to Lau. Golda Meyerson became Golda Meir. Levi Skolnik became Levi Eshkol, right? The idea of your name is your identity, and so is your language. That's how you identify yourself, and that's how others identify you as well. I know Rav Soloveitchik, he brings a very famous, I saw it quoted in several different places, and I saw the same question from the Admor of Ostrovtsa. They both asked the same question, and they both gave the same answer. Rav Soloveitchik and the Admor of Ostrovtsa, they asked on the Midrash. The Midrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu was not Zoche, he didn't deserve to be buried in the land of Israel, as opposed to Yosef, who was buried in the land. Chazal asked why Yosef's bones, they slept 40 years in the desert, and he bichlal died hundreds of years before. Why couldn't they bring Moshe's bones over the border? So there are different midrashim. This midrash says that Yosef shehoda be'artzo, Yosef, who identified himself as a Hebrew, nikbar be'artzo, he was buried in the Hebrew land. On the other hand, Moshe shelo hoda be'artzo, he didn't identify himself as a Hebrew, but as an Egyptian, he was not buried in the Hebrew land. Rav Soloveitchik asked the obvious question, what do we want from Moshe Rabbeinu? He's just telling the truth. Hare, how do we know, by the way, that Moshe identified himself as an Egyptian? When Benot Yitro, when he says the daughters of Yitro, and Yitro asks, why did you come back so early? They said, an Egyptian man saved us. Apparently, that's how Moshe identified himself. On the other hand, Yosef is always called an Ish Ivri, Na'ar Ivri, a Hebrew boy. But they're both telling the truth. Yosef is really from the land of the Hebrews, so that's why he's identified as a Hebrew. Moshe Rabbeinu was never in the land of Israel, and that's why he identifies himself as an Egyptian. So what does the Midrash want from Moshe Rabbeinu? And Rav Soloveitchik explained, and the Admor of Ostrovtsa gave the same answer. A Jew, no matter where he is from, should identify himself as a Jew from Eretz Yisrael. That is where I am from. And even if he doesn't live in the land of Israel, Rav Soloveitchik brought this in the context of, he says, people reading Yiddish newspapers or English newspapers, why don't they read Hebrew newspapers? That is our language, even if they don't live in the land of Israel. Hebrew is our language. Some of you people, for sure the people my age, remember there was a classic made-for-TV series called Roots in the 70s. Anybody remember that? First, it was a best-selling book by Alex Haley, and then they made it into it was a hit. And I still remember our social studies teachers telling us that once a week we should watch Roots. And what Alex Haley did is, in the 70s, people were discovering their roots. So Jews were discovering, well, their families back in Europe, back in Russia, back in Yemen, and the Irish were learning about Ireland, and the Italians were learning about Italy. The problem was the Afro-Americans, what they used to call the Blacks or Negroes, they were very embarrassed because their lineage just took them back to be slaves. And what Alex Haley did is he went down south to where his family was from and looked in the archives, and he found the Haley family, and he found his great-great-grandfather, if I remember correctly, his name was Toby Haley. He found the master of Toby Haley, who bought him from another master, who bought him from a ship and his original name was Kunta Kinte. And they actually had written down where in Africa the ship had come from. Alex Haley was ecstatic. He went to Africa, to that area, found a translator, and he found different tribes. To make a long story short, he found a tribe where they didn't know to read or write, but these tribes have a tribal historian who knows the family history. And he asked them, was there a Kunta Kinte in the family? And he said, yes, Kunta Kinte was stolen by the white man. Bingo. What's interesting, in the first chapter, when they bring Kunta Kinte and they sell him, his master wants to change his name. And Kunta does not want to change his name. And the master says, no, Kunta's, that's an African name. We want to give you an American name. Let's call you Toby. And he says, no, Toby, Kunta. And the master says, no, I decide your name. Your name is Toby. No, Toby. Master takes a whip, whips him. I told you, your name is Toby. After the second whipping, okay, my name is Toby. Now, why was the master so adamant to change his name? For the same reason that Kunta wanted to keep his name, because your name is your identity. By the way, the same thing with dress. When the Jews kept their dress, they kept their identity. What about tattling on each other? Well, that is also Jewish unity, national achdut. Why? This also I learned from Alex Haley. Alex Haley explained in his book Roots, how could one master and his children make sure that 50, 60 slaves who are a lot bigger and stronger than he is, how could he prevent them from running away to the north? So the answer was, the slaves would tattle on each other. And if you think about it, it's pretty logical that part of slave culture is it's very easy to buy them off. They don't have good food. They don't have good clothing. But if any of you hears that somebody is planning on running away, you tell me and I'll give you a chocolate bar. And that is how the masters kept tabs on the slaves. What Chazal are telling us is that even though it's part of slave culture to tattle on each other, our forefathers did not tattle on each other. And that was a big scoot. What about the last thing on the list? That the Jews kept their racial purity. They didn't give themselves over to the Egyptians. The only one who did, Chazal tell us, is Shlomit Bat Divri. And it says she had an Egyptian husband. This boy had an Egyptian father. In other words, Chazal say the other women did not give themselves over to the Egyptians. Here also, Alex Haley helps us understand the greatness. Because again, part of slave culture is that the masters used to exploit, they would take advantage of the woman's slaves. Right? What can she do? She can't complain to her husband, he's a slave. Her father's a slave. She can't complain to the police. They don't care. She's just a slave. So she may as well benefit from it. And that's why I remember, I think it was Thomas Jefferson had something like 10 illegitimate children from his slaves. The idea is that the Jewish people did not give them, the women did not give themselves over to the Egyptians, even though it's the most natural thing for a slave to do so. Why? Because we kept our national identity. And that is point number two. Why is it important to speak Hebrew? Point number one, because it's Lashon HaKodesh. It elevates even the secular to be holy. Point number two is if a person is proud of his Judaism, somebody mentioned they are from Montreal. I was a scholar in residence in Montreal. And they explained to me how the French Canadians are really proud of the French language. So too, if we are God's chosen people and we are fortunate enough to have God's language, we should be proud of the Hebrew language and learn the language of the Hebrew man. That's point number two. Point number three, let's go down to Source 11, which we saw already. Chazal in Midrash Halacha tell us that if you speak to your children in Hebrew, you will live a long life. Why? It's a mitzvah. What kind of mitzvah is it? So the Rambam has a very unique opinion. And this Rabbi Kelman mentioned as we were talking before. Let's look together in Source 12, where the Rambam on the Mishnah Pirkei Avot that says, Ra'oi li zahir b'mitzvah kala kechamura. A person should be careful in observing light mitzvot just as serious or heavy mitzvot. And the obvious question is, if God gave us all the mitzvot, they're all heavy, they're all serious. What does it mean a light mitzvah? So the Rambam explains, mitzvah sheyechashev ba shehi kala. There are certain mitzvot that people mistakenly think are light. They're not so serious. Kegon simchat haregel. For example, eating meat, drinking wine, wearing a new dress or new earrings on Yom Tov, that doesn't feel religious. As a matter of fact, it feels like physical pleasure. Comes the Rambam and tells us, if it is one of the mitzvot, apparently that is spiritual meat. That is spiritual wine. That's part of Yom Tov. Again, raising the physical to be spiritual. The Rambam gives another example, Ulimidat Lashon HaKodesh. That is also a mitzvah that people take lightly. If you speak Hebrew, if you tell a joke in Hebrew, it doesn't feel religious. It doesn't look religious. If you talk about the weather in Hebrew, it doesn't look religious. As a matter of fact, if somebody grows up in Israel and that is the spoken language, it doesn't even, you don't have to make even a conscious effort. That's your mother tongue. That is what people mistakenly think are light mitzvot, like physical pleasure on Yom Tov, like learning Hebrew. There are mitzvot that the Torah tells us their severity. Right? If you don't bring a korban Pesach, you're chayav karet. Lose your share in the world to come. You don't circumcise yourself. These are the only two positive mitzvot where there is a punishment for you of karet. Tzitzit, we mentioned last time, is equated with the rest of the mitzvot put together. So if the Torah or Chazal tell us that these mitzvot are, everybody knows these are heavy mitzvot, of course you're going to do Brit Milah to your 8-day-old child. So too, the Rambam says, you have to be careful about the mitzvah of learning Hebrew. Now, what kind of mitzvah is this? Is this Deoraita or Derabbanan? According to the Rambam, it seems that it's talking about a Torah mitzvah, midoraita. Why? Because if it's a rabbinical mitzvah, you would ask, everyone would ask, well, that really is on a lower level than the more severe mitzvot. The more severe mitzvot are severe mitzvot. They're in the Torah. Speaking Hebrew, learning Hebrew, well, that's just the Rabbanan. No. The Rambam brings five examples of five mitzvot. All of them are Torah mitzvot. Rav Yosef Kapach, Zichrono Tzadik Livracha, he was a great Talmid Chacham, and he wrote a famous article in the Sinai Journal about the Rambam's opinion, saying that speaking and learning proper Hebrew is a mitzvah deoraita. On the other hand, most disagree. Most understand the Sifrei that we just learned as an asmachta. And an asmachta is that it's really a rabbinical mitzvah and not deoraita. Rav Moshe Feinstein apparently goes in this direction. We don't have time to see it inside, but you see in source number 13, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that just like giving Hebrew names, there's no prohibition to give an English name, but it's better to give a Hebrew name. Chazal, Rav Moshe says, put that together on the same list with speaking Hebrew. He says that speaking Hebrew is a rabbinical mitzvah. And that is what most of the poskim say. So that's point number three. Why is it important to learn Hebrew? It's a mitzvah. Point number four is found in the Talmud Yerushalmi Masechet Sukkah. And I noticed I forgot to add that to the source sheet. And the Yerushalmi Masechet Sukkah says that the mitzvah of learning Hebrew, it calls it Lashon Torah. Now, this sounds like the Mishnah Berurah that we saw before. That why is it so important? Another reason why it's important to learn Hebrew is because without Hebrew, you can't really learn Torah on a high level. You're locked into one opinion. If a person reads Art Scroll or Sensino or any translation, the translator had to choose one opinion. Maybe it was Rashi, maybe it was Ramban, maybe it was Radak, maybe it was Ralbag. There are so many different commentaries, but a translator has to choose one of the translations. In Hebrew, there's the concept of Shivim Panim LaTorah. When I was a director of the overseas program in Michlalet Orot, I asked Nechama Leibovich, Zichronat Tzadika Livracha, the classic Jewish educator who taught in Machon Gold for many years. And I asked her, what's important? What should I put into the curriculum of the overseas program? So first question she asked, Nechama asked, do the girls know Hebrew? I said, some yes, some less. They went to Flatbush or Ramaz. There was an SAR in those days. Montreal, the famous Gveret Howard, who taught Hebrew in chats, right? Certain high schools, they taught Hebrew on a higher level. On the other hand, many of the girls did not know Hebrew that much. Nechama Leibovich said, first thing, do an intensive ulpan during the summer to teach all of the girls a decent level of Hebrew. Because, and I'm quoting her, if you don't know Hebrew, you cannot learn Torah on a serious level. It's not intellectually honest to learn through a translator. And if anybody wants to see examples, I wrote an article in the Tumin Torah Journal about the problem of learning from Art Scroll, where they lock you into their hashkafa. And you don't even know that they are giving you a partial view of the picture. And that is reason number four, why it's important to learn and to speak Hebrew. Reason number five, the Rambam. Let's see together to make things short. I brought the Rambam inside the Ramban. The Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim, you have it here in source number 17. The Ramban quotes the Rambam and he says in Moreh Nevuchim that why is Hebrew called Lashon HaKodesh? He says because it's the cleanest language. Why? He says that it's the only language that there are no dirty words. What are dirty words in other languages? Bathroom words. And the Rambam goes through the words that are bathroom words in the Hebrew language, and he says they're very innocent words. But in the context, you understand what they're talking about. For example, the word tso'ah, defecation. In Hebrew, the word is latzet, something that comes out of your body, right? Or the sex organ is called the aver. It's just called the organ. The Ramban says, well, that would be a good reason to call Lashon HaKodesh Lashon Nikiyah. The Ramban disagrees. The Ramban says, why is Lashon HaKodesh called the holy language? And this is reason number six. The Ramban says, because it is the language of God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in the Hebrew language. It says, Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or, God said, let there be light, and it was. And according to the Kabbalah, he spoke, whatever that means, obviously different from our speech, but he spoke and created the world with the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. God wrote the holy eternal Torah in the Hebrew language. He only speaks to his prophets in the Hebrew language. And this is another reason. By the way, Rav Kook adds on another reason, sort of connected with the Rambam. Every language expresses a philosophy. I remember as a kid, they taught us that Eskimos have 50 different names for snow. Why? Because snow is their life. They do their laundry in snow. Their houses are snow. They cook in snow. Everything is snow. English, French, every language expresses its hashkafa. If you want to live a Jewish hashkafa, Rav Kook says, speak the Hebrew language, which not only is clean, like the Rambam says, but also, for example, when you call the names Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, we are just mentioning Greek gods. Why should we, religious Jews, talk about Greek gods? That this is the god of the sun, Sunday, this is the god of the moon. In Hebrew, we count based on Shabbat, Yom Rishon LeShabbat, Yom Sheni LeShabbat. If so, we mentioned six different reasons why Lashon HaKodesh is important. But we have to address the question. Some of you may have heard that the Satmar Hasidim Davka say that you're not allowed to speak Hebrew as a secular language. Now, ironically, the Satmar Rebbe in his Sefer Vayoa Moshe, he deals with modern Hebrew. On the one hand, he says modern Hebrew is not Lashon HaKodesh. On the other hand, he says, but it's enough Lashon HaKodesh that you shouldn't use it for secular speech. If you see, it's sort of a oxymoron. Nevertheless, what is his source? All right, we saw that there's a mitzvah to speak Hebrew, that hallows, makes everything holy, even the secular. It's a nationalistic, a Jewish pride. It's a mitzvah. It is clean. It's the hashkafa. It's God's language. And if you want to imitate God, imitatio Dei, so you should speak Hebrew. But what is the source of the Satmar Rebbe? The answer is, let's look quickly, running out of time, the Rambam, in his Perush HaMishnayot, in source number, way down, source 22. The Satmar Rebbe relies on the Rambam in his commentary on the Mishnayot, where the Rambam talks about the different types of speech. And he says, She'im yushne shirim, say there are two poems or songs. V'zeh michelik ha'dibur ha'maus, and say the words, the lyrics are disgusting, pornographic. Lefishu ye'orer v'yizarez l'midah p'chuta, because they talk about negative things. V'yeh echad mishne ha'shirim ivri, v'acher aravi u'bilshon acheret. Say there is a Hebrew song which is dirty, and an English song which is dirty. Tiyesh miata ivri vadibur bo yoter meruchak l'data Torah machma kedushat ha'safa. Dafka, because of the inherent holiness in the language, the Rambam agrees that there is inherent holiness, but he says if you use it for the wrong things, then it's worse to curse in Hebrew. It's worse to talk pornography or sing dirty songs in Hebrew. Why? She'en ra'ui lishtamesh bo ela lema'alot, because Hebrew should be used for high, lofty things. Now, the Satmar Rebbe understands, well, the Rambam is saying that you should not use Hebrew for secular things. But that contradicts the Yerushalmi Masechet Shabbat, and it contradicts the Sifrei that we saw on Rashi brings down, that you should even speak with your little babies in Hebrew. You can't learn Gemara with a two-year-old child. A two-year-old child says Abba, Ima, Mayim, Ayev, right? They don't talk words of Torah. They don't daven at the age of two. Nevertheless, the mitzvah is you should speak to them even mundane, secular things. So not only that, you cannot learn what the Satmar Rebbe wants to learn from the Rambam, because the Rambam in Ilchot Kriyat Shema, in source 23, says explicitly, Dvarim shelchol mutar lo'omram bilshon ha'kodesh bebeit ha'kisei, v'chein ha'kinuyim kegon rachum v'chanun. A person is allowed to speak Hebrew in the bathroom. And you can talk secular things in Hebrew in the bathroom. Now, we all know you're not allowed to daven in the bathroom. You're not allowed to say Divrei Torah in the bathroom. So if this is the same Rambam, and the Rambam, how could the Rambam say you're not allowed to say secular things in Hebrew? That's not what the Rambam is saying. Not only that, proof number two, the Rambam in source number 24. The Rambam says, "V'lo ayu igrotayim v'chiburei chokhmutayim v'kitvei chol shelem ela b'ktav ivri." The Rambam differentiates between old Hebrew letters, which were used only for secular things, and square letters, which were used for holy things. But you see here in black and white, the Rambam says that secular things were written in Hebrew. Different letters, but the same language. Archaeologists found many, many different coins, secular, all of them in Hebrew. So how could you explain the Rambam otherwise? Another proof, the Rambam in his letters. I looked for letters of the Rambam where he's corresponding with somebody who knows both Hebrew and Arabic. For example, Ovadia Hager. There was an Arab Muslim whose name was Abdallah, who converted to Judaism and changed his name to Ovadia, Abdallah of Ovadia. What language did the Rambam write to him? He knows both Arabic and Hebrew. The Rambam wrote to him in Hebrew. The Rambam writes to his translator, Ibn Tibbon. Ibn Tibbon translates the Rambam's works from Arabic to Hebrew. So he knows both languages. Here's the interesting thing. The beginning of the Igaret, the Rambam writes the secular things. How's your wife and children? He writes them in Lashon HaKodesh, Hebrew. Regarding the Divrei Torah, the whole idea is how to translate certain topics. What did I mean, says the Rambam? The Divrei Torah, the Rambam writes in Arabic. So the secular, he writes in Hebrew. Exactly the opposite of the Satmar Rebbe. And we'll finish off with the Yavetz, verse 25, where the Yavetz writes, imagine to yourself, when we, Kshayu Yisrael al Admatam, when we were in the land of Israel, Ulishonam Lishon HaKodesh, of course, we used Hebrew for newspapers, for secular things, even in the bathroom. In other words, it's very difficult to learn not to use Lashon HaKodesh for secular things. As a matter of fact, the exact opposite. For sure, you want to say that's the Satmar Rebbe's opinion. He's entitled to his opinion, but that, without a doubt, is not the opinion of the Rambam. So we should not say it in the name of the Rambam. What did the Rambam mean? He said that your speech should be lofty. You should never curse. You should never talk derogatory things. But if you talk it in Lashon HaKodesh, it's even worse. That's what the Rambam is saying. He's not saying you should not use it for secular things. Adkan.
Okay, thank you. You want to take a look at the questions? You want me on the chat
okay. box? How do I get to the questions?
Jeff, I can go through them if you'd like.
What, there are 47 chats? Wow.
So to review methodology, the Bavli is the halacha when it and the Yerushalmi both pronounce the same topic. So only if the Bavli is silent, right? The halacha is like the Yerushalmi. Correct. The column okay. by iPad. Yes. Okay. Ephraim Shmuleli.
I'll let you read them because.
Yeah, that's fine. That's what I'm doing. Ephraim Shmuleli Katav Sifro, Shiva Tarbiyot Yisrael al Rivdei Hasafa, Vakesher Lamahut Ayodut, Vamsud Hasafa. Okay. I guess Tova's just pointing out some good books on the importance of Hebrew, I think. Okay. Steinzel says loads of words borrowed. Yes. Okay. So there are a lot of comments so far. The Story of Hebrew by Lewis Gilbert. Yes, I have. I read half the book. Actually, I didn't finish reading the book from beginning to the end. All right. Afikomen, of course, is also not a Hebrew word. Let's see if we get to any questions. Okay. Yes, the Genovese just asked if from your testimony is true. Correct. People don't make them swear anymore in court. Talking about that. Okay. Sefer Yitzira. There is a distinction between Brit HaMaor and Brit HaMilah, meaning language, indicating that Hebrew language is a covenant to our destiny identity. Okay, I didn't totally follow that. I don't know anything about Sefer Yetzirah. I mean, I know.
Yeah. But, There's a lot in Kabbalah about the Hebrew language. That could be a whole lecture unto itself.
Okay, he defines it. So Noah's claims that Yiddish, some people want to say Yiddish is Lashon HaKodesh, but then that's a Ladino would be. But I understand it's Lashon La, it's been sanctified by the use of people. Okay, what about the Tanaim and Urim who had non-Jewish?
But it's not the original Lashon HaKodesh. Everybody agrees with that.
So I'm wondering, what about all the Tanaim and Urim who had non-Jewish names? Are people like, Jay's a non-Jewish name, things like that? So that's.
I was just waiting for somebody to ask.
That's
that
fine. That's good.
About
that's
Aramaic.
Rav Moshe said you don't have to have Hebrew names, but what? You addressed it, I believe, that for all kinds of reasons. Listen, you were in the workplace.
And also, usually your parents don't ask you what you want to be named. But right. When you decide your names for your children, so that's your prerogative.
But
I do want to address why the Talmud was written in Aramaic, because that usually somebody asks that one. And the Torah Tamima answers it, like always, answering the question with a question. There's a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch that you can write a bill of divorce, in any language. But it has to be one language. You can write a get in French and half in English, but you can't write half in French and half in English. Why? Because you want to make sure that both the husband and the wife both understand the whole thing. But anybody who's ever seen a bill of divorce knows that the classic nusach of a divorce is worded in Hebrew and in Aramaic together. Interspersed, just like the Gemara. The Torah Tamima says there's only one possible answer to that question. And that is that Aramaic is considered a stepsister to Hebrew. That they considered Aramaic like a type of Lashon HaKodesh. And that's why they wrote it in Aramaic. And that's why the standard get is kosher.
Although the reality is the Gemara, the Amoraitic statements are 90% in Hebrew. The Aramaic is the stem of the Gemara. I don't want to get into that whole issue. I think it was put together.
The
people point out that, like Amar Rava or Abaye and Rava or Rav Huna and Rav Chista, when they make comments, unless they're telling a story, like a Hu Gavra, it's always in Hebrew. The stem of the Gemara that asks the question, fills in the details, that's required to hold of the shear. That part's in Aramaic. That was added later.
Rav Simon wrote.
Correct. That's where I got a lot of the information from. That's right, Dr. Heyman, Rabbi Heyman, correct. So that's the Chumash, the Moraim really did speak Hebrew. But the bottom line is you are allowed, listen, we get the shear in English. And you are allowed to give names in Hebrew. And that's what Rav Moshe does say and does explain. Yeah, okay, good. In Israel, I'm just going through the rest of the questions, comments. In order to serve in the army, the names were changed to Hebrew. Okay, yeah, that's what you were talking about. Shimon Peres Persky, I think you said something else as his last name. Okay, this later. Okay, Bazooka Joe Comic. Okay, it's only good in Hebrew. It's Kav Ashurit, according to Beit Yosef. That's interesting. It's Kav Ashurit. Okay, that's our language would not be the way modern Hebrew is written. Okay, that's interesting. I don't know if you want to comment on that.
What's that? That
he's saying the Bazooka Joe comic, in other words, the Hebrew that is the secular Hebrew that's elevated to Lashon HaKodesh is only if it's in Ktav Ashurit,
I think Bazooka Joe is written in square letters.
Yeah. Okay.
They're a little tilted as far as I remember, but
yeah, not square. Okay. Okay. Pointing out Moshe was dressed like an Egyptian, of course. Okay. What do we have to title the secular authority? Okay, no, that's Noah was addressing the question Rabbi Feldman had in our Lashon Hara class last week. Obviously, to prevent harm, you must tell Lashon Hara. You're obligated to tell them. If you want to listen, that was Rabbi Feldman, Daniel Feldman spoke about that last week in his talk on Lashon Hara. What about Rav Cook's view on vegetarian? I'm not sure why that came up. How did that come up?
Maybe in another series. We'll do that one.
Believe that. And we're talking Hebrew, not vegetarian. But I don't think Rav Cook Mamish was a vegetarian. The Nazir was a vegetarian.
The Nazir was. Cook,
right.
And I just happened to find out this week, that the Nazir, somebody asked me if he was a vegan last week. And this week, by chance, I met an older woman whose father had a moshav, and she used to go with him every week to bring eggs to the Nazir. So we finally got an answer to that question.
Okay. Ipad wants to know what sources Ben Yehuda used. Right, I know he did use sources from the Mishnah. The fact that people opposed him, no news. That's just that they oppose you doesn't mean you won't use their sources.
I should point out that Eliezer Ben Yehuda lived about a 45-second walk away from Rav Kook's house. And my educated guess is that we know that he came on a regular basis to ask us whenever he could not find a word in the Tanakh, in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, he would write it down. And then every couple of days, he would come to Rav Kook with a list of words in Yiddish. And he would ask Rav Kook, who had an unbelievable encyclopedic knowledge, if he can think of a word for this and this thing in Hebrew. So Dafka Rav Kook has a large portion in modern Hebrew as well.
Yeah, the fact that his motivations were not religious is sort of irrelevant. All the secular Zionists who came to, it's very interesting to find religious also. People don't know their motivations. And they're doing something holy. That's what matters. That's mm-hmm. a whole other question, you know, the fact what their motivations are. Okay, Zev wants to know why tzitzis. So you pointed out, right, the mitzvah kala, the Rambam is saying, not what's intrinsically more important, but what people take lightly and people take more importantly. So that's at least how the Rambam understood it. I did speak about that last week. Yeah, Lashon HaKodesh. Okay, I think that's all the questions. If anybody has any questions, they can speak up now. But I want to thank you. I feel bad talking in English so much. Rav Lichtenstein, I'll just point out, of course, you know, when Rav Lichtenstein in America spoke to his kids in Hebrew. And Yeah. Apparently, Rav
Aaron. Do you know that was his mother tongue? My father knew Rav Aaron. Right. And Rav Aaron's father was my father's French teacher at BTA.
I know he taught at BTA. I didn't know he taught French.
He spoke to Rav Aaron in Hebrew. That was Rav Aaron's mother tongue. He always had an accent.
Well, he was born in France, so I assume he spoke fluent. Listen, PhD in English, Harvard. But so I don't know what his mother tongue is, but I do know.
I know that for a fact.
You can ask Rav Moshe, you know, before they made Aliyah, I think Rav Aaron made Aliyah in 71. You know, kids were, I believe all of his kids were born in America. I don't think any of his kids were born in Israel. I'm pretty sure all his kids were born in America, maybe one. But anyways, he spoke Hebrew to his kids. And there are people like that. They spoke Hebrew in Chutz. In a sense, it's more important. I always tell people, maybe I shouldn't say this, but you should speak to your kids in English because it's good to know English. Kids who brought up in Hebrew in Israel whose parents are English speakers, it's good to know English too. In other words, I don't think you're negating the importance of knowing English. You're just saying there's a mitzvah to speak Hebrew. Okay, we can.
What I wanted to say is that families in America should learn Hebrew.
Right. That's the point. 100%. You're 100% correct. And I don't know if I mentioned to you, we had in our class, I think I mentioned this the other day, you know, one of, in chat, this came up, one of the people that you're interviewing saying, it's true what you pointed out, without the knowledge of Hebrew, you can't know our sources. And Nechama used to, you know, I had the schut to have Nechama when I learned in the Gris Kolel, and she's amazing. And, you know, she would give us Musar for not living in Israel. Why do you want to go back to Chutz Laaretz? We're all like, why you, you know, Smicha students. And you know, of course, the Hebrew and Rav Lichtenstein, when he gave us the Shir and Kurus, it was all, you know, there was the same like program, same YU Smicha students. And some of the kids really had a tough time with Rav Aaron's Hebrew. And Rav Aaron said, did you go to an Opan in the summer? What did you do? You know, Rav Aaron insisted on Hebrew. You know, he would speak and I come to America, speak in English a little bit. But, you know, Hebrew was important as, you know, whatever, the language you speak when you're teaching Torah. Okay. Rav Soloveitchik speak about, okay, pointing out now. Yes, right, Suzanne pointing out, I agree. It's important to know many languages and that Shivim Pani Lutaran. By the way, that's why, you know, you're talking about art school. Of course, it's every translation is an interpretation. And that those who were you at Mark Shapiro's class last Monday night, where he spoke about the censorship, the famous censorship of Archul on Rav Zevin. We're not even even before censorship, everything is just an interpretation, but of course there's censorship. But I guess if you read Koren and Archul, you'll have a more balanced view. You know, Koren presents their Hashkafa and Archul presents their Hashkafa. And that's what everybody does. You want to know, you got to read the original sources. That's 100% sure. I always tell people, don't believe anything I say. Look it up for yourself. I quote a Rambam. Look up the Rambam. Maybe I'm misquoting it. We try to quote properly. But Okay. For the unifying fact from Michelle. Debbie, I presume you're talking about an article Ari wrote, unless it's an article I wrote that I don't remember.
Yes.
An article Ari wrote.
Wow. You have a good memory.
Okay. There you go. Okay.
Correct, Ari, you wrote it.
Correct.
Yes, okay. A unifying factor. We've spoken, I've mentioned that Hebrew today is very much on the wane in North America. You know, schools are much less into Hebrew than they were. Hebrew just isn't as big, and I think even in the schools that used to be famous for it are less into it today.
You get adults together from different places in the world, that's one thing that can unite them.
Yeah, 100%. Listen, I've been, you know, we've had a few Hebrew, you know, shirim, as people here know, you know, we had on Yom HaTzimut. I'd like to get a few Hebrew shirim. And I was quite impressed by how much, you know, I thought like 10 people were going to show up from our audience. Who's going to come to Hebrew shir? Baruch Hashem, people are interested. They're interested. We haven't done it, a lot of it. And, you know, I'm interested in doing more, but we have had Rabbi Schwartz, you should know, we have had some shirim bivrit. Because I do feel that is important, but I have to tell, listen, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, all the people in the yeshiva world, they feel language is more important. That the kid should be taught in English and forget teaching Hebrew. But of course, if you teach Hebrew, then you can teach much more. But I don't have to tell you, for sure, the yeshiva world does, you know, teaches everything in English here. And even the modern Orthodox religious Zionist world is much more English than it used to be. The kids graduating schools don't know.
Oh, maybe that was one of the reasons that we chose this topic.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, it's just, that's the reality of the way it is here. You can argue why it's happened, good, bad. That's the reality here. And, you know, and first of all, the shlichim who come to schools, which I think is also less, like I know in Toronto we used to have way more shlichim coming, but even the shlichim who come today are shlichim, are usually Americans who made Aliyah, and they bring them back as shlich. When I went to high school, we had shlichim mamash lo yadu milachad banklit. They came off the boat. It's like they came to, we're talking the 70s and 80s. They came off the boat. They didn't know a word of English. They came to America and they taught us, and you know, you sunk or swim, you know, and whatever. So it's, and people picked up Hebrew a little bit more, but you know, it didn't work for everybody. Like you mentioned chat. So I mentioned that the other day that chat used to be Kulobi free and it isn't anymore, but chat also used to have 150 kids in the school. Now they have 1100 kids in the school. So there is a good reason to offer stuff in English. Cause if it was just in Hebrew, half the kids wouldn't be there. So yeah, Rav David. Okay. I'll let you go. I'll let you go. And okay. Thank you very much. And this evening, of course, Mark Shapiro continues, 8:30, his correspondence with Gedola Yisrael from across the spectrum. Tomorrow, Ora Wiskin continues her series on Hasidut, and Ilana Goldstein-Sachs on Sefer Rut, and all our regular shirim this week, the Parsha Shir this week, Thursday evening, Rabbi Shaul Robinson from Lincoln Square Synagogue, and we invite you, well, look forward to seeing you, and look forward to learning here. We should have a good week, B'sorot Tovad, and we should hear only good news, and all the best, everybody. And thank you, Rabbi, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
My pleasure.
Okay. Have a great day. Bye-bye.